bed. Accessing. BFBS. Multimedia.
Broadcasting in glorious colour on 32 transmitters around the world, available on the net and as a podcast for the portable player of your choice, this is your user-friendly guide to technology and the web, BFBS Multimedia. I'm Mark Phillips.
And I'm Dave Raven. And this month, the smart whiteboard has come a long way over the last decade. I visit Stelges to visit their brand new DOU, Deployable Operations Unit, a whiteboard in a box which is operational within 2 minutes.
The photographer's friend, PaintShop Pro, enters its 12th version. Find out what's new, what's stayed the same, and then win a copy in the multimedia competition.
Earlier this month, I went to BBC TV Centre in Wood Lane in London for the new Mac music makers, the iPods, including the wonderful iPod Touch.
And if you're not turned on by Dave's raw iPod lust, put it away. I've got a pair of new Zen players from Creative, which might just tickle your fancy instead.
In the competition, we're giving away the box set of the Return of the Saint.
That's all coming up right here on Multimedia.
BFBS Multimedia.
More and more people these days are getting digital cameras, they're getting digital printers, and they need to do something with their prints before they print them out and before they send them to their friends. And so they often get a photo editing suite of some sort. Often it's included in the camera software you buy. But one of the leading bits of software that you actually pay money for, and it's still extremely popular, is PaintShop Pro. And PaintShop Pro 12 has just been released. Chris Bober is product manager for Corel. Welcome to Multimedia.
Thank you, Mark.
PaintShop Pro is a long-standing program. It's been around since before we started Multimedia, and that's almost 10 years. It's been going a very long time. But it's evolved from what started off as a simple piece of shareware to a fully-blown program that really is the best competitor to Adobe's Photoshop.
What we pride ourselves with Corel PaintShop Pro Photo X2 is to provide the best value for money in a photo digital editing program, but also one that's feature rich, one you can actually grow into and move beyond what's free with a camera and make sure you've bought a piece of software which is actually going to grow with you and your experience level.
Now, this is the 12th incarnation of this software. What's changed? What are the headline features that you've added this time around?
We do a lot of research between what our users, our registered users, want to see in the program and also what the market trends are. So some of the highlights of this release, for example, HDR photo merge, to have high dynamic range photos where you can actually take 3 or 4 or 5 photos at different bursts with different exposure settings and actually merge all those exposure settings together to actually give you one optimum photo. The other thing is, everyone's conscious with the decrease in the price of technology, memory cards, increase in digital SLR cameras in the market, want to make sure that you have a quick, easy way of taking that huge burst of photos. So you've gone away for the weekend, you've got 100 shots. How can you quickly take those from your camera to your PC, browse each one individually, and process those? By that I mean change, edit, and enhance one after another without having to actually open each one individually, go through, decide what you want to do. So we have a workflow approach which suits everyone. So we've really tackled all the spectrums of the market.
Now, Dave is very much an expert on photography. He knows what he's doing. Me, I'm a complete Luddite. I sort of point and shoot. And one of the things I've always liked about PaintShop Pro is that it gives me, the user, a lot of power to do stuff that I wouldn't otherwise have the capabilities of doing. I remember a couple of versions ago, you introduced a very good red eye reduction, for instance, that sort of thing. There's always been a very good enhance this photo button. One button, and it gives you a better looking photo without you having to do very much. Is that approach still retained?
Absolutely. We've embellished on that, and we pride ourselves on tackling all spectrums of the market, whether you're a novice, an aspiring photographer, semi-professional, all the way up to a professional. We pride ourselves, we've got our learning center, which immediately gives you the approach where you can actually go through all the steps in the learning center, find the step you want to take to your photograph, and it will guide you through that. We've got the Express Lab. So we've taken the 5 or 6 most common tools and built that into a brand new interface. Or you can mine through the extra tools. So what I'm really saying is there's always room to grow with the application.
Isn't there a risk, though, is that the technology gets more powerful, it can do more stuff, there comes a point when a new user is just going to look at it and freak out because there's just too many knobs, there's too many buttons, there's too many bells and whistles.
That's the beauty of having things like the Express Lab. It cuts down the interface. So as a novice or brand new user, you can go into the Express Lab, and all you're going to see is a set of five different features, which are the most commonly, through our research, most commonly used features. So things like Red Eye, Crop, Straighten, our award-winning and unique makeover tools, which allow you to take any photograph, you know, reduce wrinkles, paint on suntan, whiten your teeth, things like that. Things that everyone wants to do to their photos are all captured in just one interface. As you close that down, you've always got the learning center. So these again are captured into different categories, from open to adjust to enhanced to print and share. So you can really choose your interface. One of the things that we found through both our beta testing and our research is the Express Lab, some of our novice users were saying like they really want to just keep that open for the first few months, just learn what they're doing. But what we've also done is we've included video tutorials in the actual application disk. So you can watch those and see our masters at work and again learn with the software.
So it holds your hand, if you like, on the easy stuff.
Yeah, exactly. That's the way. Where you can clearly go, well, I need to click here, move this, and etc. So I don't need to get a manual. I don't need to learn. There is a manual in the box, obviously, but you don't need to get out all the time or go on a course.
I've got a friend who works in a print shop, and she says people just can't get the hang of knowing what they're actually bringing in. So, for instance, somebody will bring in a 50 megabyte file that's the size of a postage stamp, or the other way around, they'll bring in their valued photograph, but it's been compressed so much that it goes all jagged when it's printed out. Are there things to help with this basic level of what's going on with my camera? Why is it wrong?
There's a couple of things we've done in this version. For example, as you say, everyone now is buying new cameras. And with those new cameras, you've got increased camera resolution, picture size. And with increased picture size, you've got file disk size. And there's nothing worse, you've taken a photo and gone, wow, it's an amazing photo, and you don't actually realise that's a 15 megabyte file. What do you want to do with that? Well, you want to share it with your friends. Perhaps you want to email it or take it to your local printers. And there's always that confusion, how do I do that? Do I resize it? Do I need to change the dots per inch? What's the resolution? And these are all technical terms which we try to make simple and easy. So we have a new device called Edit Copy Special, and I'll automatically downsize that, change the resolution, downsize the image print size for you. You don't need to worry about anything. So you can automatically take that 16 megabyte file and make it something simply shareable, yet still viewable.
One of the things that we've really liked in the past about PaintShop Pro is that when you buy a box copy of it, you get a book with it, and it's a real book that tells you what's going on. It's a proper manual. It's something you can sit there and read in the bath, if you're that way inclined, and find out about the new software. Do you still package a book with it?
We not only package a full supporting manual, plus we have a full help file as a PDF on the actual disk. We also include a whole group of videos. So you can either refer to the book, and like you say, you can sit in the bath and read the book. Well, perhaps I wouldn't recommend this to anyone. Sit there and actually watch these videos, perhaps not in the bath. And then you've got the learning center. So you've got three different ways of actually learning this software as you go through it.
And finally, if you're an existing user, how much does it cost? And if you want to go out and buy a copy of PaintShop Pro 12, what does it cost if you're not an existing user?
Okay, as a non-existing user, we're looking at £79, including VAT. For our existing users, our upgrade users, we're looking at £49.
To find out more about Corel PaintShop Pro 12, have a look at www.corel.co.uk. That's www.corel.co.uk. Chris Bober, Product Manager for Corel, thank you very much for joining us here on Multimedia.
Thank you, Mark.
PFBS Multimedia.
It's Multimedia. We're almost 10 years old, and 10 years in technology is a huge length of time, and most things, computers and all aspects of the technology, have really come on in leaps and bounds. One thing that's changed very dramatically, which you may not have realised unless you use them on a regular basis, are the interactive whiteboards. And these are these touch-sensitive displays which look like a whiteboard, and they've replaced entirely the old-fashioned flip charts, and they're getting better and better. However, they're quite complicated to set up and install. It's normal normally a rear projector, and all of the ramifications and the stands and all the bits and bobs that go with it can make it quite a time-consuming item to actually get operational. I'm with Stelges, and I've come down to see their launch of the Deployable Operations Unit, the DOU, which effectively is a smart board, interactive whiteboard, inside a case, ready for instant deployment in the field, and it's operational within about a minute. I'm with Alex Wood, the Defence Business Manager of Stelges. Alex, what was the reasoning behind Stelges putting all of this stuff inside one complete unit?
It's essentially the reason was we analysed the competitive landscape in terms of what products were currently being used, especially in the military market. And what we found was that the products didn't actually meet the needs of the people that would be using them. So they took kind of 45 minutes to an hour to set up. You know, they were costly, they were too heavy. You know, their leads were missing, they had redundant parts. And we thought, well, there must be a kind of better way to do this. If people are using this technology, let's make it the right solution. So we came up with something which we call the Deployable Operations Unit, which is shortened to the DOU.
Which effectively is a unit in a box with a sound system. And what you've done is kind of make it squatty proof, haven't you?
Yeah, as much as you can make anything squatty proof, I guess, but yeah, completely. What we did was looked at a setup time of sub 5 minutes. We actually got it to sub 1 minute. The box is fully self-contained. It's transportable. The cost isn't really an issue, and it still provides the same technology that people are going to be using in the training environment. But when they go on operations, there's not going to be that change of using a different technology, a software, and it makes that whole transition slightly easier.
Did you find when you were putting it together that the using the new equipment, so to speak, it was actually difficult to get it into a box to get it so you could get it all the weight and easy to deploy?
Yeah, it's one of those things that you kind of have to do a reverse manufacture or developing. We actually designed it from the outside in. So we looked and said, we need to get it in one box. So you kind of build the box first, then you build the components, which is probably a strange way to do it. But it kind of works.
But they're off-the-shelf components, though, aren't they?
Yeah, completely. It's got to be. For the military market, they have to be, you know, COTS products, because if something goes wrong, it has to be available immediately to hot swap.
And so effectively all you do is you arrive somewhere and plug it in the mains.
Completely. We've actually taught someone today, and they said you could actually use it on the back of a Chinook on the way to somewhere, and yes, you actually could. But the intention is for them to take it to deployment, whether that's in this country or Iraq, Afghanistan, wherever. And within 1 minute, they've actually got it up and running, showing their briefing, their planning, their op cycles, mapping, whatever it may be. And it's reducing that time from deployment to briefing to actually execution of what the mission is.
The presentation I've been to this morning, it seems you've worked pretty closely with the MOD and the RAF in particular.
Yeah, I think that's a standpoint that I consciously took. Although I've got a military background myself, what I wanted to do was work with stakeholders from across different services of different levels, brigade, division, battle group, whatever, and even down to the people that would be using it in the procurement offices to say how should we make it and why should we make it and everything else. And by involving them for the last nearly 2 years, that's why we're at where we're at today, because we've designed a product that hopefully fulfills a lot of those requirements.
How close are you to having it in the field? I know you've got a couple made, but presumably there's more to come.
Yeah, well, let's hope there's more to come anyway. But we've actually field tested it already for a Ford exercise, and it went very well. We're showing it at the DSEI Major International Exhibition next week, and then it goes back out for its second field trial. But the initial units will be purchased at the end of September, and that will be trialled by the RAF unit.
What about the Army? Are they sort of showing interest, or that's hopefully coming up?
Yeah, completely. The Army's showing interest so far. At the moment, I've been working with HQ Land Command, and they're building their business case, as well as the 3 UK development. Certainly the Signals Regiment, because you know they're the type of people that would be setting it up, so they've got a vested interest in making sure it's right. So all three services so far have actually shown quite an interest.
You say developing the business case, because obviously by doing something like this, although it's using off-the-shelf equipment, it obviously adds a price to it. So you're having to show them that the extra price is worth the effort.
Yeah, and it's something you've got to justify, because if people are paying more than they are for competitive products, you need to make sure that that's justified, as you say. So what we did was analyse the other products and made sure that we won on every single benefit. And I think we've achieved that, and the price, you know, if people are already placing orders, even though we haven't actually launched it officially, then I think they show that the price is acceptable to the market.
I think what impressed me the most was when we came into the room and the presentation started, you literally pressed the button on the side and the whole thing just opened up automatically and started off automatically. And that must have taken a fair amount of reverse engineering inside to get to do that.
Yeah, and I can't claim too much credit for the engineering side. Mine's more the kind of the knowledge transfer. But, you know, the team that we have here is a good team. Their point is to work out a solution and then kind of work backwards to say, how do you build that solution? And that's what Stelgis are. We're looking at a marketplace, finding out what the customer actually wants, and then, as you say, a reverse engineering process to work out how we get to that point.
The screen you're using, SmartBoard, is the leading one in Stelgis as the sole rights for SmartBoards in UK.
Yeah, we're certainly in a very fortunate position because we're the sole UK distributor for smart interactive whiteboards in the UK. We have a market share throughout the whole of the interactive whiteboard market of approximately 60% and have recently sold our 200,000th unit. Education was kind of the key market initially. You know, most kids in schools, I think it's 5 million kids a week are seeing a smart board, which is a huge number, and it's kind of a nice number to quote here.
And that's in about 10 years, isn't it, really?
Yeah. It's 10 years. 10 years is about the life cycle, I guess, of we've been really working on this product. Within the last 5 years, the uptake continues to grow, which is fantastic news for us, but not just in a commercial aspect, but in terms of the actual technologies being benefited from, which is you know, the best thing to achieve from a product, I think.
If I go to the Stelgis website, can I see what you've done here, or is it still secret?
I've shown you, so I guess it's not secret anymore, no. But it will be launched on the website very shortly. The DSCI exhibition next week will be the official launch to the public, and then there'll be collateral to follow that on the web and buy hard copy.
So if you go to the multimedia website at bfps.com/multimedia, you should be able to see a link to Stelgis and the new DOU.
You will definitely be able to see a link.
Alex, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
Competition time on multimedia, and first of all, let's look back at last month, and the prize was the Great Saint DVD set, and the question we posed to win it was who were the odd one out in this list of actors? Roger Moore, Ian Ogilvy, Vincent Price, and Sean Connery. Lots of correct entries, and some wrong ones as well. We won't cause embarrassment. And the one we've drawn out as the winner of the set is James Bodie. That name rings a bell. I actually think you won a long, long time ago, James, but I haven't heard of you for a while. You're now in Salisbury in Wiltshire, and you correctly said the odd one out is Sean Connery, and then all the others. Vincent Price was on the radio series of The Saint, Roger Moore, of course, on the television show, which we know from 62 to 69, and then finally Ian Ogilvy, he was on The Return of the Saint, the DVDs were giving away, between 78 and 1979.
And for this month, well, we've talked about Paint Shop Pro on the show, and we've got some Paint Shop Pro 12 to give away. Or is it? Is it Paint Shop Pro 12 or Paint Shop Pro X2, which is what it says on the box? They insist, Carell say it's Paint Shop Pro 12. But if it was really in Roman numerals, what would it be?
Entries, as always, to multimedia at bfbs.com, and you'll find out if you're a winner in a month from now.
BFBS Multimedia.
Multimedia for September. Earlier in the month, I had an invite. Well, to be more correct, Mark had an invite but couldn't go, which I reckon it probably peeved you more than a bit, did it, that you couldn't go to the Apple launch?
Yes, you know, when there's talk of a new iPod, it's always very newsworthy, and to hear that it's going to be more people there than I think they've had in a very long time. Unfortunately, I had to go to something else, but nonetheless, you went, though.
I did, and I wasn't really certain what to expect, because first of all, it was at the BBC, which is quite an irony in a way, because the BBC are not particularly Mac-friendly. Their iPlayer doesn't work on the Macintosh, but the BBC had been paid to host it in their huge TV suite number one, which must hold about 800 people. It was full. I got there, and we were in the media section at the back, and then a kind of strange sensation for the next hour and a quarter, as we watched Steve Jobs in California doing the usual Steve Jobs presentation, full of Americans whooping and cheering, but of course we are the staid Brits, so we sat in our seats and didn't whoop and didn't cheer, but of course Steve presented all of the new iPods. The Shuffle, the smallest one, isn't really new, it's just got some fancy colours. The iPod Nano, which is the most popular iPod of them all, the iPod Nano in fact came out smaller and wider and thinner and was very, very impressive.
And then, of course, there was the one that everybody had been waiting for, and some people have been asking me what to predict, and I said it's probably going to be pretty much like the iPhone without a phone, and it's pretty much what it is. It's a touchscreen, widescreen device. It's got one of the things that's very important. It's got built-in Wi-Fi, so you can connect it to a network. Now, that same, you know, it's not just web browsing. If you think about it, if you've got, say, a Gmail account. Mm. then you can get your email on this thing wherever there's a Wi-Fi hotspot. So suddenly you don't need a BlackBerry or anything because your email is built into your iPod.
Or anybody who travels as I do and picks up your mail via a webmail browser means that, again, you can check all your mail and respond to it. At the end of the presentation, we all then troop downstairs for a glass of something to drink and something to nibble and a chance to get our hands on. But, of course, there were 800 people all trying to play with one. Well, actually, it was more than one. There was about half a dozen of the iPod Touch. So the time was very limited, but it was my first experience of what the iPhone is like and what the iPod Touch is like. And I must admit, it is absolutely joyous. It's one of those rare things. I was a bit slow in buying an iPod. You were one of the first to get an iPod, and I couldn't really justify it, I felt. But the iPod Touch, my order's in for the end of this month. It is just so, so lovely. And as you say, because it does the wireless in, it means you can do an awful lot more with it. And there's some other great features on it, and it's just a joy to work.
Now, you've actually picked one up and held one. I'm very jealous because I haven't even seen one yet. How big is it compared to, say, an ordinary iPod?
If you take the iPod Classic, as it's now been renamed, the original iPod, it's a fraction longer. Not very much longer, just a fraction longer. A fraction wider, even less in terms of the fraction, and actually thinner than the original iPod. So I've got an iPod Video, and this is thinner than that, and only fractionally bigger. So it's still a bit large to fit into your jeans pocket, and in fact you wouldn't really want to, but it's got a great screen on it, and with the Wi-Fi part of it, assuming you can get onto a network, you can almost—it's almost like a PDA. It's not really an iPod anymore. It's a PDA which plays music. Of course, that was just over 2 weeks ago, on the 5th of September. This week, on the 18th of September, on the Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock at the Apple Store in Regent Street, Steve Jobs was in the UK, and he was announcing the launch of the iPhone in the UK on November the 9th. Amazingly, the cost of the iPhone is going to be £269, and the cost of the iPod Touch with the 16-gigabyte hard drives, so twice as much space, is going to be exactly the same price. It's going to be a difficult choice. Do I go for the iPod Touch with 16 gigabytes of memory, or do I go for the iPhone with 8 gigabytes of memory and then £35 a month to O2?
So, first impressions, you love it. You love it to bits. Yeah,
exactly. But of course, iPods aren't the only players in the field. I mean, they do dominate, but they aren't the only ones. And one company you have to feel kind of sorry for, because they invented the MP3 player, are Creative. I've still got one of their Nomad jukeboxes on the far corner of the studio here, which was huge. It's like a CD player. And it seems that Creative, as soon as their boys and girls bring out some new design, weeks later, Apple come along and they bring out something which is actually almost the same, but slightly better. And Creative have got some new devices out now, have they?
Well, in fact, they've got a brand new one that was so new I wasn't even able to get it on the show. But a couple of their most recent things. The first thing was their answer to the iPod Shuffle, and that was a little thing called the Zen Stone. And originally, it's a very, very tiny thing, weighs almost nothing, and it's basically got a little control on the front. And the trouble with the Zen Stone was exactly the same as the Shuffle, is that it didn't have a display on it. So then they've come out with something called the Zen Stone Plus, which is pretty much the same thing. It's still tiny. I've got one in a very garish lime green colour. It's got 2 gig of onboard memory, which is double what the iPod Shuffle has got. It's also got a small but very usable display on it, so you can actually see on the screen what you're listening to. And it's also got things like a stopwatch and a clock built in as well. So it's very tiny. It doesn't cost very much. I think the Zen Stone Plus goes from about £28 and up, so it's very, very reasonably priced. One of the things I really like about it is that the socket on the side is a standard mini USB socket, which means that if you've got anything else that's got mini USB, for instance a camera or anything like that, then you can use the same lead to plug it in and charge it. It's very easy to transfer songs on and off. You just drag and drop to it. Sound quality is very good. The user experience, it's I'm sorry to have to say this, but it's not an iPod. It doesn't have that marvellous simplicity that the iPod
basically the iPod consists of five buttons and a little ring, and that's it. This one has five buttons, but it's also got a couple of extra buttons on the side, and I'm never quite sure how to get stuff. It hasn't quite got the same sort of simplicity of menu structure.
It's anybody who has never played with either an iPod or any MP3 player, or has only ever had an iPod and never played with any of the others, you can't realise the difference in between the two, and the experience of actually using anything which is not an iPod is just so clunky compared with the Apple system.
Indeed. Anyway, that's the Zen Stone Plus, and I have to say it's great for kids because it's very rugged. It looks like it'll survive a bit of a bashing. It comes in some nice, funky, bright colours, and so it costs very little. Mm. So you could easily. Still has a rechargeable battery built into it, though, so it's got everything you need. You just plug it in to charge it into a USB socket. There is talk that they're going to do a little holder for it to make it a watch, which I love that idea. So you mount it on your wrist,
yes,
like that, and then it suddenly becomes like something out of Thunderbirds, where, yes, you've got a wrist communicator type device. But as I say, it's good. I would definitely take it in preference to the iPod Shuffle. But I wouldn't take it over, say, a Nano.
Right.
Now,
which is the next one you've got on your hand.
Which is the next one I've got.
The creative version of the Nano.
Yes, this is called the Zen V Plus, and it has an excellent screen on it. It's a sort of a square screen rather than a wide screen. It's difficult to describe quite how tiny this thing is. It fits quite happily in the palm of my hand. It's black, it's shiny, with a sort of a blue highlight on it. As I say, it has 8 gigabytes on it. It's got some rather nice features. It's got a very good FM radio, for instance, built in, which none of the iPods have even now. And I know a number of people have said, why not? Why haven't they put FM into it? This also records, which is very unusual. It has a line-in socket, which means you can record straight from a tape deck or anything that gives you a line-out. You can plug straight in and record. So if you had a tape deck or an amplifier, you could actually play your records straight onto here and encode them to MP3 without having to go through a computer at all.
That's something we'll come back to next month on Multimedia, because apart from recording from line-in, which of course is good in some ways, it means you can't plug a microphone in, but you've got something which you're going to be trialling in the next month and reporting back on in the October edition, which actually you can plug a microphone in one end and this plugs into the line input of whatever device you've got.
Yeah, again, this is another one of those things that creative, okay, now they've put a line in, so it'll take a signal from outside, and it's got recording built in. It's also got a microphone built in, so you can actually use it as a little dictation machine. But why don't they let you switch so that you can plug a microphone straight into it so that we can use it on the radio? Somebody has come up with a little device for that, and I'll talk more about that next month. As I say, the screen on this is excellent. Again, the audio quality is very good, but again, it's got some annoying little foibles. For instance, you set it to record, you start recording something, after 5 seconds or 10 seconds, the display fades out. I like to be able to like watch what I'm listening to.
Yes.
Do it's just there's just something comforting about that.
And the price of that,
These are coming in at about £69, so again, cheaper. They're getting there on price, they're getting there on the usability. It comes with, there is now a downloadable podcasting app, so if you want to listen to podcasts on it, you can do that from Creative. And it interfaces, again, if you're not an iTunes user, it interfaces with Windows Media Player, and it enables you to load it up from Windows Media Player. Again, I have to say, this is really where the iPod and iTunes score over both Windows and the Creative things, is just that the whole user experience of using iTunes is so much better than Windows Media Player. This stuff should be so simple and so obvious that absolutely anybody can use it, and that's what they've done with iTunes, and that's one of the reasons why the iPod has been such a success.
As always, we'll have the photographs and the links to Creative and to Apple on the Multimedia website.
It's not a bad player, the Zen V Plus. There is a third one that they've just introduced, which has got a bigger, wider, flat screen on it, and I'll be looking at that in a future edition.
As always, we'll put the photographs and the links to both the Creative new Zens and also the new iPods on the Multimedia website, bfbs.com/multimedia. And that's almost it for the September edition of Multimedia. Before we go, a reprise of the competition.
Indeed, and we have boxed copies, brand new, of PaintShop Pro 12, or PaintShop Pro X2, as it says on the box, literally hot off the press, not just the CD of the program, but also you get the book of words as well, and very good it is too. All you have to do is tell us, what should it be in Roman numerals? It says PaintShop Pro X2 on the box. What should PaintShop Pro 12 be if it was written correctly in Roman numerals?
Answers, as always, to multimedia@bfbs.com. That's also the address for any questions you may have until the October edition. From me, Dave Raven.
And from me, Mark Phillips.
Bye-bye.
Ta-ra.